Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. The Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook said, we're posting stuff because we think it's fun. It doesn't need to make sense. It doesn't even have to be right. And we're doing it the way that we want to. So you're not allowed to do it the way that you want to and telling us that we're wrong. So just go away. Leave us to have our fun, meanie pants. Part of the reason for doing this Vlogcast was also to kind of go with the old adage that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I'm known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. You can find me on G+, Skype, Facebook, all over the freaking place. And you know what? If you have a problem with typing it up, tough. It's right here on the screen for you. Just go from there. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, to a Roman Catholic family, raised on Long Island. I am now living outside of Buffalo, New York, and am an unabashed atheist. Joining me tonight, and apparently the other third of the crew right now, is Unrenowned Tech.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Something's working right tonight. That's fantastic. I'm Unrenowned Tech. I'm from various places. I currently reside in Southern Maryland, and I've gone through many steps to get to a point in my life where reason and logic are the dominant forces.
We'll go with that. All right. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Yes, we're running a little bit behind schedule. There's reasons, technical reasons, bad technical reasons, but we'll talk about that another time. It is September 28, 2014. This is episode number 35. No, I don't have anything witty for it. It's just the way that it is. And the title for tonight is Word Crimes, although it could just as easily have been Lost in Translation. And we're going to be talking about trying to clear up a lot of stuff that gets mentioned many, many times over that just drives me up a freaking wall because I am really sick and tired of expressions being used over and over and over again that may be absolutely completely valid, but just absolutely miss the point of trying to go with clarity. Before we get started with it all, 5 minutes on the clock. Earlier this week, I had effectively a meltdown, if you will. The way that my schedule works typically on a weekday is that the little one and I both get up around 6 o'clock in the morning. She gets up first, and she gets up at 6, starts getting herself ready, starts getting breakfast together. I get up about 6:15 to make sure that everything's working right, that she's eating, she's got lunch, get everything together so that she can get out for the bus at oh dark stupid in the morning. After she gets on the bus, I get back up the stairs, go to bed, take another nap for give or take about another hour before I have to get up and get myself ready to go off to bed, go off to work. Well, Monday, things didn't exactly go as normal. Monday, I ended up having a dream that rattled me really, really hard for the entirety of my day. And no, surprisingly enough, it wasn't a nightmare. In and of itself, it was not something scary. It was not something that would have otherwise been scaring Mr. King to his core. And by this, I mean the author. It was a dream that involved my wife. She's been gone 9.5 years. And the contents of the dream are truly immaterial. But it blindsided me emotionally. It hurt a lot. And it stuck with me all day, to the point where by the time I got home from work, about 2:33 in the afternoon, I got home, and by 4:30, I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm done for the day. I would normally have had a DJ gig that I would normally do in Second Life, and I just called it off and just said, no, it was still 5 hours away, and I just said, no, not going to do it. Just that burnt. We've discussed several times on the show about death, dying, grieving process, what goes into it, what people can do to try to help each other, and that ultimately we have to cope with our own stuff. But there's another piece of it all too, and I don't want us to forget. We don't forget on the inside. And it sucks. It really, really sucks, because no matter how many people ask you if you're okay, no matter how many people offer to help take your mind off of things or babysit for you or offer you something to make you feel better, to help take your mind off of things, or even recreational chemicals. Ultimately, all that you have to deal with, all of the turmoil, all of the demons, all the nightmares, all of the emotions, are all still stuck inside of you. It's okay for that to be the case. And it's okay to wonder how to get through it. And it's okay to work on just getting through one more hour of the day. Just one more hour, just one more hour, just one more. Oh, it's time to go to sleep? Okay. And that's good. Because ultimately, every hour you get through, every day you get through, is another day you got through. And it's another day that you've had the opportunity of building up your strength to get through one more day. Sometimes it's good to look at the long term. But there are other times where you have to stop and think to yourself that pure survival is a noble enough cause. There's nothing wrong with that. So we're going to talk about stuff. We're going to talk about terms and words and expressions that are supposed to be clarifying in the skeptical and the atheistic circles, but ultimately, I can't stand them. I mean, we talked a while ago with Noah and Heath from The Scathing Atheist, and we were talking about the religious tropes that we just can't stand and really just want them to just go away. Technically, these are the atheistic and skeptical tropes because they're used over and over and over again, and it is just an absolute pain in the ass to me because they're absolutely right. What you say to explain the terms are absolutely right. But they do FA for trying to solve the problem of understanding. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to clarify these things. So I've got a couple of them off the top of my head. And Tech, you guys as hosts, co-hosts, are in the unenviable position of kind of going, okay, what are we going to talk about now? So now that you've got pretty good ideas to where we're going here, do you want to open up with anything right off the top of your head that's just kind of gone, oh, crap, yeah, I know the kind of thing that's pissed me off?
Yeah, when people say to me, well, you got to have faith in something. Have you heard that one?
I've heard it, but that... I'm not sure that's exactly
what I said it really snide, but the statement is you got to have faith in something. And that really bothers me because to me, faith means a blind trust in something. Regardless of what the target of the faith is, it's a blind trust. My trust needs to be earned. Okay? My parents have my trust. They've raised me. They've been good to me. They disciplined me when I was wrong, and they praised me when I was bad. Okay? And they've earned that trust. But you know, people go, well, God is like that. It's like, no. God's not like that at all. God, in the Christian sense, will punish you and punish you and punish you some more and burn you and torture you until you do exactly what God wants you to do. Read the Bible. It's in there.
Yeah.
Okay. However, my parents understand that as an adult, there are things that I'm going to disagree with them on, that I have a different mindset about things. So while there's some things that I have, may have thought or said or done in my past that they're disappointed in, they understand that as an adult, it's my right. You know, there is a point where they can continue to advise, but they can't make me do things anymore because now I'm an adult. Now it's my turn to make my decisions and my choices. God, as they say, doesn't let you do that. You must think the way they want you to think. You must do as they want you to do. And by they, I mean the various religions of the world. And they're, until you step out of the mindset of the religion that you're practicing, you cannot see that you are being controlled by it. Is there a big deity that made everything? I have no idea, and neither does science. And they admit it. They have no idea, but they really want to find out. They really want to find out. Now, the religious are going, well, you can have the answer in our book. No. You don't understand. Your answer in your book is supernatural. That means it's beyond the natural functionings and orderings and laws that govern the cosmos. And we don't know. The laws that we currently experience, the laws of gravity and evolution and all these other rules and the way the systems work may be different once we get outside our own heliosphere. Okay, we don't know how things change throughout the other sections of the cosmos because we haven't been there and we haven't tested. We only know that some things seem to be, they're measured to be the same, like the spectrum of different compounds seem to be the same. Okay, they just made that discovery of the compounds way out in outer space that are building blocks for life. So we're questioning, you know, well, life, there was life on this planet, but did the seeds of the life, could have come from even further beyond our solar system? They could have come from another galaxy because they're way out there. So okay, we're learning something new, but to have blind trust? No, I don't have blind trust in the scientists. I have some trust in science and technology based upon the results and the documentation and the procedures that they have demonstrated. They've given us indoor plumbing. They've given us open heart surgery. They've given me allergy medication. Okay. And they've gotten to the point where I can buy it over the counter now.
Yep.
Yeah. Come on. Pharmaceuticals. Prosthetic limbs. You ask anybody who's come back from a war, who's lost a leg and can now walk without crutches or a cane because they now have a synthetic leg. You tell me that that person doesn't like science. You tell me that that person doesn't trust technology. I call bullshit.
Yeah.
And they're just starting to think that they figured out how to make a prosthetic limb mount to the bone underneath the skin as an actual extension of the bone because they're using the way the horns come off the bowl, the membrane. Okay. They're studying the membranes to see how that keeps the infections out because that's the only thing preventing us from mounting the prosthetic limbs to the primary bones in our limbs so that they'll be stronger and more reinforced, you know, like the real thing. So they're studying that. And they'll eventually make a breakthrough. I put my trust in science to get that done because they have made these kinds of breakthroughs. but I have not seen or observed a supernatural being coming down and putting technology or assembling technology in a manner that we cannot understand or in a manner that we can understand.
And, you know, I wasn't exactly sure where you were going with this at first, but believe it or not, you end up with a really, really good one for us to start off of. So let's kind of pare this down a little bit. First item up, the concept of faith versus trust. That is a huge, huge gap between the two. And you're right. I mean, you went on. Yeah, like I said, you had me worried there for a second. Where are you going? But
I know it seems like a roundabout way to get the point across.
To be fair, it was. But
right. When you add up the totality of it.
Yes. Yes. That, like I said,
you saw my Facebook post, didn't you?
I know.
Yeah, you gotta go visit my page. About putting faith in something.
Well, I'm not really good at that kind of thing. Anyway, but the ideas between faith and trust are really, really friggin' annoying. And it gets to be a real pain in the ass to make sure that people understand when you're talking about faith, it is not necessarily trust and vice versa. As Tech pointed out, faith is just, you said it? Okay, I will believe you. Doesn't matter what it is. I will believe you.
It's a lack of proof. You're putting trust in something with no evidence, no empirical data, no proof, no nothing. You're just doing it because maybe your best friend said it, or maybe because your pastor or your rabbi said it, or maybe because some homeless guy down the street said it, and you really like the way his beard looks. You know, just whatever. Whatever the reason is, there's a lack of proof or evidence.
Right. It's just it's basically trusting authority. It's an appeal to authority straight away in and of itself. You are appealing to whatever it was that said you should trust in this implicitly without question, and boom. And it doesn't necessarily need to be religiously based. I mean, shoot, there are
faith in a person.
Because
they're family.
Yeah. You could, because they're wearing a red fuzzy suit with white trim and black boots and gives you nice things at night.
There are scientists who have faith that their hypothesis
better
that they've just come up with is correct because, well, they came up with it. And is that the way science is supposed to work? No, but that's why science has different systems in place to keep scientists from going, I have this hypothesis, it's automatically true, everybody needs to take faith in it. Mm-mm. No, that's not how science works. There's a system of checks and balances. And at the end of the day, when you tally the whole thing up, despite the ones that have despite the scientists who break the rules and do have faith in their hypothesis before they test it, before they have peer review and everything else, before they go spouting off to the media, the system itself ends up taking care of itself eventually. The only thing I see science ever having a fault is them failing to ask themselves, hey, can we do this? Instead of going, first question, should we do this? Then ask if we can do it. Unfortunately, science doesn't really enter the moral realms in many cases, and it becomes a case of, can we do this right off the bat? You know, hey, everything has pros and cons. But one thing that science doesn't do is go, if we do this, do we have to stone people? If we do this, do we have to cut off women's clitorises or men's tips of their penises? Do we have to, you know, convert people before we can start combining oxygen and hydrogen molecules by ourselves into absolutely pure water? You know, do we have to sacrifice a chicken?
Only for lunch.
KFC.
Okay,
no Popeyes. I can't. No Popeyes. I can't stand this stuff.
I've never tried them. All right. So, to put a bow on this one, because I you've actually given the second one a hit. Faith says, believe in this because. And that's it. End of story. That's the end. That bookend to bookend. Boom. Done. That's it. And I'm just realizing that my camera is kind of off-centered from me. There we go. Why were you like that?
But I don't want everybody to think that faith is negative just because of the way I portrayed it. There is a positive to faith. You can have faith based on evidence. You can have faith based on a past history of results and empirical data. You can have faith based upon reputations of people. So if my dad says that he's going to be working on the house, he's going to get the materials, and he'd like me to come over, I can have faith in knowing that he's going to go get those materials and that he does need my help.
And that's where I'm gonna cross horns with you on this one, bring it back to Hunt, and say no. Because what you're describing is a reasonable expectation of something, of an outcome.
But what I'm doing is I'm also hitting up on the fact that there's alternate definitions of faith.
Well, that's why I wanna.
I was talking about having faith in people.
Well, yes, I understand that, but that's why I want... See, this is exactly the reason for doing this damn particular item. By the way, for any
of you... I did this on purpose.
Yes, I understand that. By the way, for any of you who might be watching who have been watching and listening to Cash's show this past week, the basically a test-out show since he moved from Cash and Atheists on Air... first off, thank you, of course, and that's part of the reason for having done this, because he had a voicemail caller who said, look, you're using all these fancy multisyllabic words, and that don't impress me much, and this is what it basically came down to. That's the reason for this. And if you have questions that you'd like to pose to us, or terms that you want us to specifically garner through, please utilize the question and answer system here on the Google Hangout. Love to have feedback of any kind to help us go along with this also. Please, by all means, that's what it's there for. Utilize it. If you're looking to join us on air, the next episode of TENS show, we will be having folks on. We will be putting out the word so that we can get folks to actually be on air with us. Now, backtracking a little bit. Faith as the term would be just believe, just accept, and that's it. What I was talking about just a couple of moments ago of trust is predicated, and I'm going to hit that in a second, is predicated on the idea that someone or something has demonstrated a reliable, repeatable, I'm trying to figure out what the right wording is that I want to use that's not overly complicated. A consistent, repeatable conclusion is the best way to put it for right at the moment. If you go across a bridge, perfect example, New York City, the Verrazano Narrows Bridge that connects Brooklyn to Staten Island. Most people don't know about it. It's fairly famous. Look it up. You have a reasonable expectation driving across it, it will not fall. And trust me, it would really suck. And as a kid, I was deathly afraid of going across it. Whenever we would go from where I used to live on Long Island to go see my aunt and uncle and cousins, because I lived on Staten Island, I was always afraid. Always. Because I was fearful that it would break and we would go careening into the water below. But over time, I realized this isn't going to break anytime soon. It's been up for as long as I've been alive. It's not going to go anywhere. I've got a reasonable expectation of going across it in complete safety. And over time, I've come to realize, okay, what went into it engineering-wise, the materials, how sturdy is it, what did they take into account for the weather? And now I understand I can safely traverse it without a problem. And that goes for pretty much any suspension bridge. Now, as we saw, of course, in 19... Oh, Jeebus, when the hell was that? The earthquake out in Los Angeles. What was that, 92?
Or something like that? You're asking the wrong guy on that one.
All right. There was an earthquake during one of the World Series for baseball out in California. And there were a number of bridges that collapsed because something completely disrupted the system. Was trust in place? Was faith in place? It's an immaterial question because there was a new set of circumstances that took the trust in the engineering and threw it out the window because it collapsed because a new variable came into the equation that could not have been expected for. So it collapsed. There was people that died, unfortunately, because of that. But all things being equal, you can have trust in the reliability of that kind of mechanism. Can it be considered faith through vernacular? Yes. We would typically call that faith, just as just because it's simpler a concept, because it is a word that we can just kind of throw away to mean that. But is it really not? If you were to really get down to the nitty-gritty, it's not really. And that's the problem. Because when you start to use, I have faith that this bridge is going to stay up, well, I mean, yeah, you can say that, but it's a really dirty word to use for that. So, guys, if you're going to use the term faith when you really mean trust, when you really mean a reasonable expectation, come on.
Use reasonable expectation or trust.
Exactly. Use it. Because the whole purpose of language, the entire reason for this show, is because we need to clarify these. And if you keep using a dirty term, a loose term, you have to go back and you have to retread. And you have to, well, you know what? I said I've got faith in.
You end up sounding like I did when I put that sentence out there saying that I have faith that my dad went and got the materials and that he does need help working on the house.
Exactly.
Instead, I should have, and then I end up apologizing and saying, I should have said that I trust my father based upon his past actions of keeping his word.
Exactly. And that's a pain in the ass, because then you start to sound like you don't know what you're talking about, because you got to go back and you have to retread what you said in the first place, and it starts to put people off real fast.
Well, it's like in the beginning. In the beginning, when we had that one person who kept doing the Q&A, back when we had Witchy and Dallin and Joe constantly, what was that one guy on the Q&A?
You mean Ross?
Yeah, Ross. There was something that Ross had said, and I had attributed it to Ross, and then Ross said, no, I didn't say that. And I said, oh, okay, well, I apologize. That didn't make me look very good. But then we went back and reviewed the tapes, and it turned out Ross did say it. And so we went back and we stipulated again, and that made Ross look bad. And, you know, it goes back and forth, and it's just like, okay, we need to drop this because enough's enough.
Yeah, and it really
move on.
Yeah, it doesn't really do anything
for
us.
It's the same way with faith. Faith is a blind trust without evidence or proof or reasonable expectations.
Exactly. So please keep that in mind. If you're going to use the term, use it right and carefully. Now, you also mentioned another one that is also very important. Science. Science is a process. It is not a thing. Unless you're talking about a science book, in which case you need to say it's a science book. Science is a process of looking at stuff, trying to figure out why does something do, why is something, how does something, trying to make a guess as to what completes that question, and then poking at things until it breaks. Finding out what happens, putting it all together again, going, yeah, I kind of expected that. Or, even better, that's weird. I didn't expect that to have happened. And then amass all of that information, bring it together, check it out with a bunch of other people again, and do it again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again, until you get a consistent thing happen. Or, even better, not happen. Because when you go through the process over and over and over and over and over again, you get to find out, how does something work? Why does something work? How consistently does it work? Can you expect it to work? And even more importantly, can you predict what will happen again? And can you make it happen that way again? And more importantly, on top of it all, can everyone else do the exact same thing with that information? Have at it.
Oh, for me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you took the first one. I'm taking the second one.
I'm actually in dictionary.com, and I pulled up science, but more importantly, I picked up something else called scientific method. First, I want to hit science. You encompassed everything that is science.
Including the scientific method, yes. Yes.
Right. Science is, when used as a descriptor, okay, is a branch of knowledge. So there is the science of medicine, pharmacology. There is the science of math, mathematics. There is the science of engineering, also known as engineering. There's also the science of how certain things works, physics, astrophysics, molecular biology, you know, just all sorts of different kinds of sciences. So when we say science all by itself, we mean all of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're not talking about just this science over here and none of this science over here. No, we mean all science. We're talking about math. We're talking about biology. We're talking about all the basic sciences that most people who have a GED or a high school diploma should have experienced unless their school flubbed their curriculum.
Hold on, before you go past that, even if you don't have grand knowledge of all of the inner workings of any or all of these particular items, at least having the knowledge that they exist, you should minimally have. Now, if for some reason you don't have complete working knowledge of physics or chemistry or any of these other ones, you don't have a grand, heavy-duty knowledge, that's okay, because you can always learn more. But at least knowing that these things are out there is the most important piece.
And not only that, there's beginner books.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you really want to understand something about evolution, and you're listening to a Christian apologist talk about evolution, and they say they have a PhD. Well, a PhD says that they have, you know, one of my coworkers calls it piled higher and deeper, but they've studied something very specific, and that they are somewhat of an expert in their field. Now, don't get me wrong, experts can be wrong too.
Sure.
But when they're a religious figure saying that they have a PhD and that they're denying what science claims because they know better because they have a PhD, ask them or look up their background and find out what their PhD is in. Because there was one lady, and her name fails me at the moment. I saw this like 3-4 weeks ago, so my brain shot at this point.
It's okay.
But she was commenting on something science-y dealing with biology, and I'm not sure if it was evolution or not, but she completely botched the topic. Well, upon further investigation, turns out her PhD was in flowers. Basically potpourri, if you will.
Horticulture?
Basically. But, yeah, it just... Wow, okay, wait a minute. So you're talking about... Your specialty is basically in potpourri, and you're saying you have hand in, you know, primary knowledge of evolution? I'm sorry, no, they don't coexist. Your PhD in that. I'm sorry, I don't get a PhD in Game Boy and then tell Wall Street how to run the stock exchange. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's something that has pissed me off on many an occasion. There are a number of people who go ahead and get themselves a doctorate, diploma, PhD, whatever the hell it is, in some field or other that has absolutely nothing whatsoever in something that they later say that they have, well, I know what I'm talking about. I've got a PhD. That's great. That's wonderful. You have a PhD in animal husbandry, but yet you want to tell us that you understand the fundamental natures of a black hole and why they're red. It doesn't work that way.
No, I had somebody who used to do... they hosted job interviews for the company that they worked for. And whenever they would get somebody bragging about a PhD, they would find out what their PhD was in and what they learned from their PhD. And a lot of people take it as a misconception to brag about their PhD, what their documentation that they did, their research and field and study and everything was. What the guy was actually looking for was somebody who could claim that in obtaining their PhD, what they really got out of it, the true goal of the PhD, is being able to go in, think of something, and then do lots and lots and lots and lots of research and publish a peer-reviewed publication that is reviewed and approved and shown to be true. In other words, basically the scientific method.
Yeah, learn how to do what's required of somebody of that level.
Exactly. But just because I can do lots and lots of research on potpourri doesn't mean I can that I have the same ability to do that in the field of astrophysics or rocket science. Okay, I may not have the mathematical background for that. That's the secondary level of importance. Okay, you have a PhD. That means you're good at doing research. But does your research coincide with the topic at hand? And flowers, when you're talking about flower arrangements and flower combinations, and nothing to do with breeding of flowers, nothing to do with the biology of the flower, okay, then no, you cannot relate to evolution with that, okay? If she had studied how flowers change over time, how the flowers pollinate each other, the crossbreeding, I would say my opinion would go up a little bit. It's not down there because she's a woman, okay? It's not down there because she's a religious person. It's down there because what she's trying to do is negate evolution with a PhD at the end of her name. And she doesn't have the background to do it.
It's effectively trying to, oh God, I forget what the right terminology for it would be, but like we mentioned before, it's basically somebody trying to tip the scales in their favor by using an appeal to authority. I have a PhD, ergo, I should be right. And you don't, so you can't be.
Yeah. So when somebody says they have a PhD in science, go, really? Which branch? Because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, that's true. And that actually brings us I'm sorry, go ahead.
And they don't all correlate with each other. Okay? Some only correlate with others by going and relating to... It's like a circle. Okay? Just because this point on the circle is next to this point, it doesn't mean it relates to the one all the way around here while skipping all these points through. Science is a big, giant circle. Eventually, they all come around, and they all interconnect. But you take out some of the key pieces, and some of the stuff doesn't add up.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And that's, like I was about to say, that actually brings us to the question that was posted up in the Q&A. And by the way, thank you for taking advantage of that. Always good to have somebody bounce off of as well. And yes, Chris, by the way, is the one who posted the question, and you've got another one in the hopper. I like that second one. We're going to get to that also. But the question posed was...
you identified this person by the first name. We should have used the last name instead. That would have been more epic.
Yeah, well, it's a thing. We're going to tell
it's
you.
It's a little late now because we but not anonymity. But, you know.
But, I mean, the thing is to try to use first names because they're a little bit more generic. Anyway, so Chris is asked. Chris has asked, quote, should math be included as science? Math is based on logic and reason, but can be done without reference to the physical world. But a key aspect of science is observation of and predictions about the world. Now, that's really good because you got my head running in about four different locations simultaneously while Tech is talking. Really not a good idea to do to me. So first off, Chris, I'm going to say, screw you, man. Screw you for all the pain that you just put my brain into. Thank you ever so much. Wow. Really not
nice. He's being sarcastic. He actually does appreciate it.
Absolutely so. Okay, so should math be included as science? My first gut instinct is yes, because it is...
Math and science coexist.
They do, and I'm not sure if one is necessary, if one is necessarily dependent upon the other, or necessitates one to the other. I get the feeling, thinking about it, I think that you really can't have. I was going to say I don't know that you can really have one without the other, and I'm not entirely certain that I'm right on that. The first thing that comes to mind is chemical breakdowns. For instance, when the first splitting of the atoms of water, I know it's a molecule, but I mean the atoms that comprise water, it was discovered that you had one volume of oxygen and a second volume of hydrogen. And it was specifically in a ratio of 2-1. Yeah, 2-1 hydrogen to oxygen. Right? Right, yes. So you would need math to realize one to the other. But you can do math for its own sake without necessarily... I don't want to use the word predicated... without having it specifically about something else, because it is also a conceptual thing. I'm not quite sure. Like I said, my brain is a little bit hurting on trying to figure. Where do you want to go on this one at the moment? While I'm trying to collect myself.
Me?
Well, until and unless I can get Jake for Wharton back on with us, but you know he's being a bit of a dick about it. But that's a whole other issue for later. Yes, Jake, we actually do like you. I want you to come back again sometime soon. Anyway, so where do you want to go on this one?
I'm thinking about my own education in the back.
And yeah,
Well, not really. It's not complicated. The answer is... math doesn't have to be labeled as a science. It can be its own field, if you will, because there are plenty of... I play math games in my head, okay? And they don't require the physical world. You can use abstractions and think in mathematical formulas and not have it relate to anything around you. It's not common to do that. Most people don't. Most people think in terms of stuff that they can relate to. It doesn't take a certain kind of mind to think in ways that don't relate to things around you. It just takes practice. And most people don't ever have that practice because they don't need it. I used to get bored a lot in school. So I used to think up weird things. The point is that science on its own can actually work without math in certain fields of study. But as a whole, math is a foundation for science, and science can support math as well. Math supports science, in my opinion, math supports science more than science supports math. I feel, based upon my education, is more of the foundation for the sciences. Because I see math in my music, I see math in my science, I see math in every day. Science I see as using math and using the scientific method, I can get scientific results.
Yeah, the I
see science as a method, a system of testing questions.
Yes.
And I use math as the measurement system for those tests.
Yeah, it's exactly.
So I see them as I see math as a necessity for science to work. Now, what level of math is required? That's a completely different question, but it's a good question because people don't realize that unless you're taking like astrophysics, okay, or even regular physics, most people can get by with just algebra, basic, run-of-the-mill algebra, not even advanced algebra, just regular algebra in their daily lives. Most people don't need to know calculus. There are many people that I know that have absolutely no reason, no necessity to know how to perform calculus in their head. None whatsoever. Because they can get by just by either guesswork, observation, past experience. Okay, you know, if I pour this cup into the here and here and here, it comes out even. Boom, they didn't even need to do calculus. They could just see it. They could eyeball it. And it was good enough because it was close enough to where it needed to be. You know, the what do they call it when they do a research and they have, you know, off by +4, -4, all that, the variance.
Deviations.
Deviations, yeah. The deviation might be so small, and they don't even know what the word means. They just know it's close enough, that's good for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't need that kind of stuff. But when you have the astrophysics trying to do the orbits and everything else, yeah, they need calculus and stuff like that. So depending on what question you're asking, science will determine what level of math you're going to need. That's why having a foundation in math is really good. A foundation in the basics of math also helps you play music. Believe it or not, when I started playing the guitar and the trumpet, I had a hard time reading sheet music. When I swapped my mindset, instead of trying to recognize the musical notes as sounds in my head, I instead thought of them as mathematical formula. I was like, okay, I need to go this many steps higher. And I started thinking in just simple terms of add one, subtract one, you know, add five, subtract five, whatever. Reading sheet music became just like that overnight. Once I changed my mindset and saw it as math, I could read sheet music. And I had a music teacher that could do the same thing. In fact, that's how he taught.
Very interesting that way. Now,
he didn't teach us to think of it in math, but he saw it as math when he taught.
Okay. Now, what you were saying before about math basically being the yardsticks for examining stuff in the various scientific disciplines, that makes perfect sense. And that's exactly where I was looking for. Because you can have a measuring stick of any description, and it's you can just measure, you can just look at it, and you can say, oh, well, you've got the, you got 14 centimeters from, and that puts you from there to there. Oh, okay, that's cool. And, you know, I'm using a bad example, but just go with me for a second. But math as the system for examining the scientific endeavor is a necessary piece to go with that. But you're right, math itself can be its own discipline of learning more about maths. But it's wow, that is really, dude, seriously, well done. Good question. Hard to really digest it and to really explain it. So thank you. That is really, really cool. I think I'm not sure how much we can really go on that one beyond that, but it's, should it be its own, should it be considered science? Yes and no. It really depends as to what part you're doing with it. Can you do geometry and make it considered a science? Yeah and no. It depends as to how you're applying it. But it's the yardstick that the scientific process requires in order to figure through stuff. Really, really excellent question, by the way. Really, really hard concept to get through. And Chris had also asked, can you cover appeals to authority, both valid and not, in more detail? Because this comes up a lot. Very, very accurate, very true, and it's annoying. Appeal to authority is effectively and very simply, you should believe what I'm telling you because I have something that says that I'm supposed to be an authority on something. I have letters after, oh God, I'm going to be borrowing from a really, really bad congressional meeting. I have a lot of letters after my name that indicate that I have more schooling. So I am Uberman. I know everything there is about this subject. You should trust in me because I have letters after my name. Please, I paid a lot of money for that piece of paper. Could you maybe, you know, just listen to me? Just because I have no horticulture, it doesn't mean that I don't know what I'm talking about gravitational axes of Lagrange points. You know, just trust me. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to, isn't it?
Don't forget, an argument from authority, they tend to use a lot of qualifying words like most, frequently, almost never, rarely, instead of actually having a statistical, an actual stated statistical probability or some kind of empirical evidence, some number, you know, even if it's a number 5, you know, when they're trying to say a small amount of people, they could say 5 if they have that actual number documented. Instead, they're not giving you something that you can fact check.
Yeah.
And so people go, wow, only a few people. And then you ask, well, how few people? Well, I don't know. They just said a few. Well, is a few in relation to what? That's what happens when you have a generalization, you know, those kinds of qualifying words, when you have, oh, almost never. Well, almost never in consideration to what? The universe? Because right now, the lifespan of the human species is almost never compared to the lifespan of the cosmos, as far as science has determined to this point. But if it's, you know, relation to the fruit fly, dude, we've been around a long time compared to a fruit fly.
Yeah, what do they got, okay, a lifespan of about like 30 days or something like that?
So the point is that if you're listening to somebody and they're not giving you hard data, okay, if they're saying, well, a lot of people believe this, you ask, okay, what's a lot in relation to, Are you talking about all the people in the state, all the people in your church? Are you talking about a lot of people in the grocery store, the Krugers down the street, or the McKay's or the Walmart, or whatever it is that you go to? Find out. And when you ask that question of somebody and they stutter and they stammer and they don't, they talk around it. They talk around that question. Yeah, the tap dance, the song and dance, if you will. They don't know. They're making shit up.
Yep. And that is all too easy to have happen, unfortunately. Now, there are a number of times when this kind of thing will happen. And there are times when it is actually valid to do to make an appeal to authority under valid pretenses. As an example, there are a number of scientists who say that Darwinian evolution is incorrect, it is flawed, it is a failed proposal. You ask, okay, how many people? Well, okay, we've got a piece of paper that has a list of all the scientists who are peer-reviewed, who have problems with the scientific method that goes into Darwinian evolution. And then you examine, okay, you've got how many people on here? 14,000 scientists. Okay, let's take a look at your list.
No, folks, many? Wait, stop. Okay. Hold on, that 14,000 number he pulled out of his arse, he's using it as an example.
Yes, thank you. So you go and you look through the list of 14,000 scientists. Okay, how many of them are in the biology area of science? Oh, you can knock out three quarters of them. Okay, how many of them have ever had a peer-reviewed paper? Oh, the ones that have never, okay, you can knock out another half out of that group.
The remaining, yeah.
How many of them are evolutionary biologists? Four? Wait, you mean that we've just whittled down this list of 14,000 scientists who have problems with Darwinian evolution to only four who are actual evolutionary scientists?
And then you ask the question, how many evolutionary scientists disagree with those four? And then you have what a true ratio.
Yes. Then you start to get into really finding out who is pulling stuff out of their butt and who is just trying to be a pissing match. This works out to be even worse when you start to see news programs that have traditionally been told you need to have equal time for both sides of an argument. When you have 99%+ of scientists who accept Darwinian evolution as the mechanism for the change of species over time, and you have less than 1% who do not, and they're allowed to have the equal time with the guys who all agree after 150+ years of research and understanding and poking at the problem to find out if it's right, that's a problem. That's harm.
And you've used the 99.9% as an example.
Exactly so.
Right. Now, an over-exaggeration of what's going on, because we don't actually have the statistical numbers of exactly how many evolutionary biologists disagree with Darwinian evolution and how many oppose it.
Right.
Or oppose it and agree with it. You know, the two sides of the same coin.
Right. Now, to be fair, there are a number of things where this kind of thing has been happening, where the incredible numbers on one side versus another have tried to make, we are right, we are right, we are small, but we are mighty because we are being held down by the man. And no, the ones who are climate change denialists, who absolutely discount all of the scientific papers, 24,000 roughly peer-reviewed papers that say climate change is a real thing. Parthenogenic, I believe is the right term for it, human-based climate change is a real thing versus 400 that say otherwise, most of which have been easily discounted, and they're allowed to have as much time as the people who are saying, look, we need to clean shit up. That's wrong.
I would like to, since the basis of tonight's show is word use, definitions, things like that, I want our audience to understand what we mean by climate versus weather. And
yes, thank
because
you.
There are many politicians, there are many politicians that don't even understand this. In fact, there was a politician on a panel. I forget the guy's name. My mind shot itself. It just exploded after this review of this paper was presented, and it was the presentation was given to him about climate change, and the politician basically said, I don't understand anything you just told me, therefore I deny climate change. And my brain just went,
and it was
probably, it was like, oh my god, the ignorance is strong with this one, you know. But what we mean by climate versus weather is what's happening now. Okay, weather is what's happening tomorrow and the day after and the next couple of days. Okay.
Yes.
Weather relatively immediately.
Okay, weather is open your window, stick your head out. Is your head wet? It's raining. Is everything fuzzy outside? There's an earthquake. Is your head on fire? There is lightning. You know, that kind of
thing. Well, if everything's fuzzy, there might just be fog. If everything's shaking, you might have an earthquake.
Well, you get the idea. Anyway, but yeah, that's what it comes. Versus climate, which is you stick your head outside every day, many days, for like a year, two, five.
Every day for decades.
Right. But you also talk to the people nearby, in your neighborhood, in your state, and you compare notes, and you collect them, and you collate them, and you put it all together, and you amass a huge tome that says, on this day, on this year, this is what happened.
All over the world.
And all over the world. And consistently, on this day, Every year, it's sunny. Is it always going to be? No, but it's a good bet that 85% of the time, you're going to have a sunny day on this day. Is that going to happen every time? Probably not, but it adds into... Because we have seasons. And because things change over time, but you get a consistent view of what is an average, what typically happens. What are you expecting to have happen? How much rain do you typically get in a year? Compare that with the next year, and the next year, and the next year. And then see, what is it doing? It's 10 feet one year, it's 5 feet the next, it's 7 the following. All right, maybe you measured wrong. Maybe it actually is jumping up and down. But you have to compare that over lots of time to get a graph that you can actually work with. And it's an endeavor. It's a process. Climate is a process. It is a long-term investment in data collection. It's not stick your head out the window.
And the beautiful thing about that is the longer we do it, the better a picture we build for climate averages across the world. It was stated it was not one of the popular ones like Bill Nye or Neil deGrasse Tyson or any of them. It was stated by a gentleman on a climate change panel that in Russia, the area of Russia that's the coldest, which
Siberia?
Is basically, had in the last couple of years the warmest winters ever recorded. And that's dangerous, because if you think about the placement of Russia, the average temperatures of Siberia, And then you go and look just a little bit north of that and see how close the North Pole is and go, well, if they're experiencing, you know, a 4-degree warmth on their winters, what the heck is happening at the poles? You know, how are those minor variances affecting the poles? And we can actually see. We've already videotaped and photo documented the changes at the North Pole with the Arctic shelf reefs breaking off, collapsing into the ocean, and people don't pay attention that when ice melts, the water, the oceans actually absorb carbon dioxide. So this stuff gets released into the air.
Yeah, and it gets to be crazy because the biggest thing about the whole and we're gonna leave this on the wayside in just a couple of seconds. The biggest thing about climate change arguments, to me, the worst thing about it is not who's accepting and who's denying. It's we have consistent data that we can, that is demonstrable. We're going to use that because that's dovetailing into the next one. That is demonstrable correlation with a change in temperature in relation to X in the atmosphere, levels of X, whatever X happens to be. It doesn't matter what the hell it is. If we reduce that X, we should then bring things back to the norm, to the average. What kills me are the people who say, I don't trust you, I don't trust your numbers because I know better than you, because I'm a senator. Or I don't believe you because I'm a senator and none of that made sense to me, even though I'm on the science and technology panel, which is
hilarious
to me.
Worse yet, forget them using a senator, their political status as a reason for denying climate change.
Well,
I'm financial investment
to dovetail with before.
When you have a heavy belief in a religion, many of these religions tell you if you follow their way and believe what they have to offer, the blind faith system again, then and to not trust anybody else, that when you die, everything's going to be hunky-dory. So if you're living life so that your death will be hunky-dory, you're not living. You're dying. And you're taking other people with you. When you live each day to enjoy the day and promote the future, okay, then you're living a good life and you're helping those around you. But by going, my God says that when I die, I'm going to heaven, so why should I care what happens to our future? As long as everybody's a good Christian or Muslim or Jew or whatever the case might be, it doesn't matter what the world's going to be like. We're all going to heaven. Besides, when the happening, or what the heck was that thing
rapture.
Called? It was the rapture. When the rapture happens, we're going to be fine. You guys are going to hell anyway because you believe in science.
Yeah.
No, we don't believe in science. We have evidence.
Yeah, and of course, as we've heard from the Amish Wolverine, who cares? I mean, God's already said that he's not going to flood the earth again. Why should we have to worry about all that?
I'm sorry, but Ken Ham and science should never be uttered in the same sentence, except to be told never to utter them in the same sentence.
Right. So, for you, Ken Ham, you're right. Your God said he would never flood the earth again. He, however, did not say that he wouldn't roast it. Thank you. And by the way, Chris has also given us a number, which I believe is actually far closer to the truth, that climate change denial or acceptance is 97.4% and 3% against, which I believe was the scientific papers or number of scientists, which sounds much more accurate. So thank you. Thank you on that one. Now, like I was saying, dovetailing, the term demonstrable. I You know what? I normally don't do it, but this time I'm going to do it. And yeah, I'm getting a little bit loosey-goosey with some of the terms.
Can we start off with a much simpler one, a much easier one, one that you actually used, corrigible.
Say it again. You kind of blipped out a bit.
Corrigible. You used it. It's really simple. For those of you who do not have a Word a Day dictionary or have corrigible, you actually used it in a sentence, believe it or not, like a minute and a half ago, when you were doing your whole spiel. What corrigible means? It means to be capable of being set right. That's it. There's your word for the day.
Okay.
You don't even realize you used it, do you?
No. I would have to go back and take a look, which truthfully, I'd be arsed to do that. Don't have enough time in the day.
Okay, folks, ladies and gentlemen who may be watching this, take this as a lesson for what it is. People like Sujin, people like myself, people like the scientist on TV, we end up using words that you might not understand, okay? Not because we're trying to make you feel bad, but because we've learned them and we've added them to our vocabulary. It doesn't mean when we use them that we're thinking less of you. It means we're trying to use these words to convey a greater meaning, something greater in depth, and it's appropriate for the conversation. My ex, when she wasn't my ex, and this is a great example, every once in a while we'd be talking about something, and I'd be giving her an answer, and she would just get really upset. Don't talk down to me was one of the common statements during an argument. And I would have to reassure her that I wasn't talking down to her and I didn't understand why she was getting so upset. And I had used a word that she had not heard before or that she did not understand and she had heard other people use. Maybe somebody at work who's in a higher position within that hospital or caregiving facility. And so, please, we're not trying to talk down to you. We're just using the words that we feel through our understanding to be appropriate for the situation, for the conversation at hand. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. And truthfully, corrigible, I don't realize that I have said it. To the best of my knowledge, I did not recognize that term. So, if I said it, I don't even realize that I knew the term. So, still cool. Moving on for a second, though. The term demonstrable gets bandied about in atheist and skeptic circles like so many ping pong balls. And truthfully, I can't stand it because it is a completely, totally factual, actual, proper terminology word that does absolutely shit to explain to people what you're talking about. And that's the thing that hurts. Demonstrable, the easiest way of really understanding the term demonstrable is to intentionally mispronounce it. Demonstrate-able. It's exactly the way to properly understand it. Don't say it in proper company, but that's exactly the way to understand what the term means. It means you can demonstrate over and over again something that you're talking about. And it what you're talking about is something that can be shown to happen consistently over and over and over again. Trying to find out if neutrinos can fly faster than the speed of light. They at CERN tried to find out this shouldn't happen this way, but we're getting consistent data. It's happening over and over and over again for us. In our facility, we want somebody else to check and find out, is this right? If they showed that it was demonstrable, demonstratable, that it was a real thing, that neutrinos really did fly faster than the speed of light in a certain situation, consistently by everybody, they would have gotten a friggin' Nobel Prize. They would have been in the annals of history along with Einstein and Newton and Hawking and a whole bunch of others in the pantheon of science. But they were found out to be wrong for a simple reason. It was shown it was not a demonstrable, consistent output. They made a mistake. That's the beauty of science, and that's why I hate the term demonstrable. Don't freaking use it. I know it's right, but god damn it. Matt Dillahunty, I'm looking freaking at you, man. I love the term. It's a beautiful term, but it does F.A. for trying to explain to people. Just don't use it. At least don't start off with it. Don't lead with it. Please? No, you just help. Tech, come on, help.
Listen, if you want to demonstrate something, demonstrate it. If you can't demonstrate it, you can't demonstrate it. Right now, you can't demonstrate proof of God because nobody has any. Okay? Nobody has any evidence of God, empirical evidence. And that's what I'm going to lead into right now. I'm going to lead into it because I say it a lot. Empirical evidence. And people go, well, what is all that? And it's like, well, you know, actually, empirical evidence is actually a little bit complex. When it's referenced by the scientific community, and many atheists, when they're referencing it, are referencing what the scientific community references, not because they accept science as a substitute for religion. No. They accept science because science relies on a lot on rationality and logical arguments and evidence, specifically empirical evidence. So this is what we're going to get into now. And if you look it up on Wikipedia, there's a whole lot of stuff on empirical evidence and how the name can change depending on viewpoints, all sorts of stuff.
A lot of subthreads on that.
Exactly. There is a whole lot. But there's one little section of it that I think sums it up really nicely. So just bear with me on this, okay? And like I said, you can look this up yourself and read it. You don't have to take my word for it, but I'm actually looking at it right now and reading it. I would share screen, but it does not show up great on my connection.
That'll
Thanks
worry.
A lot, Comcast. Anyway, empirical evidence is required for a hypothesis, which is basically
a guess.
I expect X to equal Z. You know, exactly. It's required for a hypothesis to gain acceptance in the scientific community. Normally, this is achieved, the validation of it is achieved by using the scientific method of this hypothesis. Experimental design, peer reviews, and more importantly, adversarial reviews, the people who were trying to prove that hypothesis wrong, being able to reproduce the results, okay? Hence, documentation. Mm-hmm. I got these results, and here's the setting I had it. I had it in a house that was set in the Midwest, in Midwestern of the United States during the vernal equinox, you know, whatever the case might be. They document everything. So that way somebody else can go, really, you did that? I'm going to try it over here, and I'm going to document all my stuff too and see if I can get the same results. So that's what they mean by reproduction of results. They have to document all this stuff and do it over and over and over again. Then they go, once a lot of this stuff is done, they go to conferences and they start talking to other people in their field, and they go out and they do this stuff all over again. And if enough results come back of the people who have done this test and they are positive to this hypothesis, then they typically will produce journal reports on the stuff. And then that gets out to even more scientists, and they do it. It just keeps going and going and going and going until finally it's been done enough times that the scientific community can go, you know what? Yeah, we haven't had any kind of deviation or variation that's been extreme enough to say that this hypothesis is false. Therefore, the hypothesis becomes true.
Becomes accepted, and if it passes enough rigor over enough time, it becomes a theory.
Right.
Which is an explanation for stuff that we see that is consistent, that is accurate, that is reliable over all situations that we can come up with currently.
Don't forget, there's also exceptions. There are theories and hypotheses that have been factually true, but only when applied to particular situations. It's like there are different sciences used for different things, okay? When it comes to carbon date testing, we've found that carbon date testing is only good for certain time frames. Mm-hmm. If we need to go outside that further back, then we have to do different kinds of radioactive testing. There are hypotheses that have become true, factually true, but only under certain circumstances.
Yep.
So they hold true as long as the groundwork stays the same, but it, maybe if this portion of the groundwork changes, then this becomes false. And that's one of the reasons why you want so many of the people of the scientific community to come together and not just try to prove it right, but also to try to prove it wrong, because we make breakthroughs. And if any scientist tells you that we don't do it, this has never happened, they're point blank lying to you. We have made tons of breakthroughs trying to produce A and winding up with B.
Yep, which is part of the way that we ended up with
Silly Putty.
Excellent example.
We wound up with a wonderful children's toy by some guy trying to find an alternate form of rubber.
And
or vulcanization, I mean.
And it just happened that way and didn't know what the hell to do with it, tried to sell it through different methods, and you know what? Let me try that. Hey, a 3-year-old over there is having fun playing with it. Maybe there's something to it. And it worked. Scientists love... Okay. Again, I'm gonna bend the rules a lot again. As a rule, and rules are meant to be broken, scientists love to break shit. That's one of their biggest things. How does this not work? That is...
So do people in the maker community.
Yeah, there you go. If you can find, I mean, there is an expression in engineering terms, fix it till it's broke. Stress testing is used to be the way of doing things with test pilots for aircraft. Before you had computer modeling, you would design an aircraft, you would use the principles that were known, Bernoulli's principle. If you don't know about it, look it up. It's what keeps your aircraft up in the air, unlike prayer. Pat Robertson, I'm looking at you. Why don't you have the good sense to die? Sorry, anyway.
Oh, come on. Do you really want to poison the worms?
Yes. And ultimately, you would need somebody who had nerves of steel and a really good parachute on his back to go into the aircraft.
Really good reflexes.
Really good reflexes. Take him up in the air and put a plane through its paces. Put it through a 2G turn, 5G turn, 7G turn. Did it break up? No? Okay. You know what? That matches with what we're expecting. If you go looking up, one of the greatest scientific Americans, and I use the term very, very loosely on this one because he was not that much of a scientist, Neil Armstrong was a test pilot. Almost died on one occasion, and you know, doing the test pilot kind of thing. Later on in the day, he was found hard at work back at his desk doing paperwork, and the guys were just like, "Wait a minute, Neil, you almost died today. Come on, man, come on out to the bar. I got paperwork to finish up." That's the kind of guys the test pilots were. Yeah, they had stuff to do, and they wanted to break stuff, and I don't know how well they got paid, but Neil got paid by going to a whole brand new planet, sort of. That's pretty freaking awesome to me.
A moon.
Yeah. So,
but don't forget, other scientists have also paid the price for their work.
No, it's true.
You had Richard Feynman. It was never proven, but with what we know now about radiation, radiation sickness, the breakdown of the human body, he, as far as we know, is the only human being to have seen with his own eyes, without any filtered lenses whatsoever, to have seen the detonation of an atomic bomb. Everybody else, even people who were affected by detonations, almost, they wore goggles. There's no other documented person, okay? So we don't have any other documents and anything showing that there was another person who did the same thing that he did. He watched the explosion with his own eyes. And he almost went blind from it. But he got a nasty dose of radiation from playing around in the labs and handling of materials, and wound up having his body shut down, his organs deteriorate. And we know now that radiation, especially the types of radiations that he was exposed to, have these side effects. But since they didn't do an autopsy back then, looking for the things that we look for now, they were never able to confirm his death was caused by that.
And to go along with that, just looking up, there was something that was called, I'm trying to remember what it was. It was the Devil's, damn it, I forgot what it was. Was it Devil's Core?
Are you talking about when they practiced, they had the two domes with the radioactive material and what they could do is they could hold it close together and watch the glow? And as long as they didn't let them touch, it didn't produce the radiation that could kill.
Right, that's what I'm trying to remember what the hell the name of it was.
Yeah, and you're talking about that one scientist who it slipped, but he managed to get it open so that only he ended up receiving a fatal dose of radiation, whereas everybody else was safe from the fatal dosage in his lab at the time.
Yeah, that's the one I was trying to remember what the name of it was.
They did a episode of some science episode. There was a gentleman who played Walter on the science fiction television series called Fringe. Okay, he hosted a documentary, if you will, about some of the dark sides of science, and that was one of them. Another one was, and I don't mean dark sides of science of bad things that science has done, just things that are grim. You know, like the one guy who lost his ability to have long-term memories. And he found out he was old one day because he walked in. He was surrounded by computers in the doctor's lab. He didn't know what computers were. He looked in the mirror and he saw an old man looking back at him. And they had to calm him down for the rest of the day. And he woke up the next day still thinking he was whatever his mid-20s or whatever age he was. Yeah. So it's...
Yeah.
I forget the name of the series. It only ran for a season or two. If you search for Walter in Fringe, for the actor on IMDb, then you'll be able to find out what shows he hosted. And
I have to look that up afterwards. Yeah, I can't recall where the particular item was, so I'm going to leave that aside. But a better example, however, would be the Curies, Madame Curie, and her daughter, and her husband. Radiation, and it...
Well, her body eventually started to break down from it, too.
Yeah, but at this point, the only way of looking at their actual physical notes is to put on radiation gear and then look at the stuff, because...
I forget what they were boiling down. Was it saltpeter that they were boiling down?
I couldn't even tell you. No idea off the top of my head. But, I mean, the scientific process unfortunately does have its downsides, and that's kind of what we're kind of describing here.
Yeah, they discovered the radioactive nature of, I think it was radium or something.
Yes.
Kept boiling down this rock until they went downstairs. They were doing this in their own home.
Yep.
Science takes, you know, thanks to the scientific method, thanks to all the botches that science has made, we have come up with ways to protect ourselves while we learn.
Yeah.
But not usually until after something bad has happened. But anyway, they came downstairs to a blue glow coming out of their kitchen. I'm sorry, if you're melting down rocks and all of a sudden your kitchen is glowing, with what we know now, run.
Yeah, we know for... Well, actually, if you come down and you see it, chances are it's already too late. But we knew that now, too.
Well, don't forget, they also played around with the stuff. They hung around it. They got more rocks and kept doing it over and over and over again.
It's a simple case of ignorance. And that's what science breaks down. It breaks down ignorance. What we didn't know, we didn't know.
Let's talk about ignorance. You know what? Because that is
a word that
definitely comes up.
Yes, and that's unfortunately the last one that we're going to have time enough for. But it is a brilliant, brilliant idea to go ahead and hit that one because that is such a supercharged word. You go ahead and hit it first.
Okay, I'll give you the very simple definition of it. Lack of knowledge.
Thank you.
Being ignorant means you lack knowledge. It doesn't mean you're stupid. It doesn't mean that you can't learn. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn. Okay, it just means that you don't have the knowledge. Now, you can be ignorant of one thing and not another.
Okay.
But there's a difference between being ignorant because you have yet to learn something, and then there's being ignorant because you choose to be.
Now I'm going to stop you there because I'm going to hit that one. There is a difference between ignorance, which is what it's talking about, of not knowing about something, and what's known as willful ignorance, which is an absolute travesty. It is the absolute antithesis. I'll explain it in a second. Absolute antithesis to what science is for. Science is for learning about things, to take ignorance, not knowing about something, and learning about it. Willful ignorance is la 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 la. I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to you. Whereas ignorance of something can be cured by learning, by asking, by being taught, by examination. Back to you.
The problem with religion, and I say this in that I say many religions, is that, like Chris is pointing out, is that they appeal to ignorance. They
hold on a second. Let's actually broaden this. Not religion, dogma, because it doesn't matter what piece it is. It could be denialists of 9/11 truthers or birthers or whatever. Dogma is really where the problem is. No matter what it's fast.
And I'm going to use a generality of many dogmas because I don't have an exact number, but of the the religions that I'm familiar with, of the dogmas that I'm familiar with, which may be different from Sujin and everybody else, until we all sit down and start writing down all the ones that we're familiar with and start comparing notes, we won't have exact numbers. And so science says, okay, well, you're making generalities. Yes, I am. I have to. Because we, right now, on this show, at this time that's taking place, don't have the time nor the means to do a long-term collaboration. Okay? This is something that we may be able to address in a future episode, but not right now. The point is that I have not studied every religion in the world. I've studied the standard Judeo-Christian. I have learned some things about Mormonism, about Islam, and Jehovah's Witnesses, Taoism, Taoism, Hinduism, a little bit of Buddhism. I really got to really read up on that one.
Okay, before you finish there, don't forget, you do know a little bit about ancient Egyptian. You do know a little bit about ancient Roman mythology.
I know a little bit about Greek mythology. I actually know more about Greek mythology than I do about Egyptian mythology. But the point is a lot of them, they use ignorance to make you want to stay with them, to convert others to you, and to bow down. And that's why when you find a lot of atheists, not all atheists, because there are plenty of atheists out there that are atheists for the wrong reasons, that they're not using logic, that they're using their emotions. I know that my emotions help push me towards atheism, but at the end of the day, it was the logic that set it firmly as a groundwork for me. Mm-hmm. Okay? But there are other people that I have met that are atheists because, yes, they are mad about their outcome in life. And so they choose not to believe because they're angry, as some say. But I've met more who are not angry. They're using logic, hence why they're atheists. Logic is religion and dogma's enemy. Logic and reasoning and intelligence and learning allows you to break free from the boundaries of religion and dogmas. Okay? They allow you to expand your mind, to have better understanding. Because I want to appeal to something here real quick. People say they have all the answers. Their God or gods give them all the answers. How do you know that your particular deity didn't make evolution to make everything the way it is? How do you know that your deity doesn't want us to have an understanding of how evolution works? How do you know your deity doesn't want us to have an understanding of how the cosmos is round? Because some guy sitting out in a turban in the middle of the desert doesn't have anything better to do than wipe his butt or play with his hoo-ha or whatever? Okay? You're going to take that guy's word? Why?
When you should actually be taking mine. Because we know full well from our scripture, the loose canon, the flying spaghetti monster put everything here in exactly this way with the system for evolution in place so that we would have changes over time so that we wouldn't be bored for the rest of whatever. So may there be
volcanoes
and midget strippers for all of you raw men.
Oh, jeez. You had to throw on the flying spaghetti monster, didn't you?
Look, you know full well what the point was for having done that.
Right, I understand. It's like the old saying, if there is no flying spaghetti monster, how come all the plants are shaped like meatballs? You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
Now, the flying spaghetti monster, I know full well that I'm using it as a joke, but it's there for a reason. It's parody for a reason. Because just like so many people will say, that's stupid. Who would ever believe something like that? Now you know what we say for exactly the same reason.
So when you have a group of people and you have kept them using dogmas or religions ignorant of the things that are going on around them, they will always look to you for guidance when they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. It is a means of keeping control of a crowd. Look at what goes on now with the advent of the invention of the internet and the means to communicate. What happens when a dictator wants to take better control of his or her country? What do they do now? They shut down the internet. They shut down communications to the global world. They shut down the Twitter feeds and the cell phone networks. They try to. Somebody's always finding ways around that stuff. They censor the... Look at China. The communist China.
North Korea.
To keep control of their population, they filter their internet. And when they find people getting through their filters, what do? They knock on their door. Well, I'm sorry. I'm saying knock, but what I really mean is that they knock down the door and they put a gun in the person's face and they say, hey, You can come work for our group, finding other people like you and figuring out how to stop them, or you can die. That's not everybody, just the really good ones who take a long time to get caught. The ones who get caught easily go to prison, things like that.
They disappear.
Yeah, some of them just disappear, don't even know what happened to them. And in Korea, the with Kim Jong-un, whatever. I'm sorry, I'm not really good with foreign names just because I don't say them very often.
No, it's okay. Right now it's
he went around telling his country that they have the best health care in the world. Really?
And they believe it.
And they believe it because they don't have access to the rest of the world. They have no way to make a comparison. They're kept ignorant.
Yep.
If you, as an American, try to go in there and help the people will turn you in. The ones that you're trying to help who are being oppressed will turn you in because they believe, due to ignorance forced upon them, that they are doing the right thing.
Yep.
For right. their country.
Now we gotta get ourselves out of here because we've blown past the hour and a half, and I try not to have us hit the 2 hour mark anymore, really hard. So, Chris, I'm gonna hit you with the last question that you put over here, and the second one that you've got over here, the longer one, is a wonderful thing. I would love for you to hit us with that again later. It's just gonna take us way too long to get into that, and unfortunately, you know, we're coming up on the end over here. But thank you for that one. Because also, good questions. Wonderful. The last one that Chris had hit was, can you include the appeal to ignorance? If you go back a couple of weeks, we had Cash from Atheist on Air when we talked about, you'll see it in the list, the playlist as PSAs, which in this case means presuppositionalist apologist.
No apologies.
Right, which is basically the position that, of course there is a God, of course it is my God, how could you think anything differently? It's like you're trying to say that we're not standing on the earth before you go ahead and you prove that we can swim in the ocean or some such bullshit like that. The appeal to ignorance is, if I can't find a reason why something happened, well, it's obvious that God did it. Because there's no other explanation that we can find that proves it, and really that's in a nutshell really what it boils down to. Tech, you got a good example off of that one, because I've only got one off the top of my head.
There are scientists and mathematicians who they were asked questions, they found answers, but eventually they reached the extent of their knowledge or their expertise. And in rather than trying to go beyond that, they stopped and said, well, it must be God. They used the God answer as a means to give up searching, okay? Whether because they were tired, because they didn't want to look anymore, maybe because they got tired of being asked the same questions over and over again after giving all the proper answers, and they just said, you know what, I'm just going to tell you what you want to hear. Or maybe they truly could not fathom, they were at the limits of not only their knowledge, but maybe at the knowledge of and technology and mathematics and science of their time, and so they had no other answer, so they defaulted to God instead of saying, I don't know.
Yes,
and now this is something that science is more likely to say, I don't know, when they don't know.
Right, and that's the appeal to ignorance is also a facet of what's known as the God of the gaps. I don't know how you got from this point in things that you've discovered. So obviously it had to have been God bridging that gap. And it's all part and parcel.
But don't forget, God of the gaps has a diminishing return. Yep. Because as we find those answers to those gaps, God becomes less and less the answer. And that scares the hell out of people who have been willfully ignorant of the facts in support of their God, and now they're finding that there are these people out here going, listen, you don't have to say that God did this, because we now know this. We now have understanding, comprehension. We have the knowledge of what goes on here, and it's no longer a secret or a miracle. It's not a God answer. It's an actual, logical, knowledgeable answer. And that scares the hell out of somebody who has lived their life according to their dogma or their religion and been willfully ignorant, being told that, no, you're wrong. And you've been living your life based around that fact wrong. And guess what happens to people who, you know, the results that of the things that have gone wrong in your life by living around that, that was your own fault. People don't want to hear that. They hate that. People don't like to be told they're wrong. There are scientists that have the same mentality. They proved something, they found some scientific discovery, whatever, and it got peer-reviewed, and, you know, everything was hunky-dory, but 20 years later, some new technology and scientific formula or mathematical formula came out going, listen, when we came across these answers and we thought we were right, we were actually wrong. And those scientists who did the discovery will go, I'm not wrong. They don't. That's their emotional side. They don't like it. And people, even scientists, are very emotional. And that's the part. That's why when you tell somebody they're ignorant, and which is nothing more than being a lack of knowledge, a lot of them take it the wrong way. Because so many people have used it as an insult, it now triggers their emotional mind state. That's why I don't say that this person lacks knowledge by calling them ignorant. I say this person lacks knowledge of this field.
Yep. And me, I will usually only use the term ignorant for myself. After I've used it that way to demonstrate that I don't have a problem with calling myself ignorant, I will occasionally say that somebody else is ignorant on a specific subject, on a specific item, and here's how we can solve that and work it from there. The emotional aspect to language is one of the biggest problems, and actually I'm gonna end up closing with that. So we're coming up on the end of our time, and we got to get on out of here. So of course, as always, Tech, thank you so very much, man. I mean, just the two of us. I know full well normally we would have the rest of the crew.
Just the two of us.
I had a feeling you were gonna do that. Don't do that if
you're gonna go to sleep with that.
The worst part of it is I've got the video to see for that. Thanks so much.
Hey, so, I actually, instead of thanking me, I'd actually like to thank Chris for showing up, because that last question that we didn't get to,
yeah,
I actually had to look that one up because I'm not even familiar with that effect.
Yeah.
That we could turn that into a whole show.
Yeah, we may. We may.
I would have, but if we are, you better warn me, because I have got to do research on that thing.
Oh, hell yeah. So that everybody knows what's happening, Chris had made a question about the Dunning-Kruger effect. And this is something that if you listen to the podcast for The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, they've talked about on recent shows at the time that we're filming this. But it's an amazing thing. It is a dense and complicated topic. And yeah, if we are ever going to tackle that, that is going to be a full show with lots of forewarning so that we can all get familiar with it. But
and a lot of big words.
Oh God, yeah. And that, and
I just pulled up Wikipedia and I'm going, oh great, not only do I have to research this thing, now I've got to look up what this word means.
Yeah. Yeah. So Chris, like we said earlier, thank you. Because you've thrown a lot of stuff at us that is really fun, that is really dense, that is really complicated, that really needs answers, which is part of the reason for doing the show. But man, you're going to keep us spinning wheels for a long time on that one alone. So thank you for asking questions like that. That means a lot. It means that we're finding people.
Hold on, don't click away on you. I want to get a screenshot of this thing.
Of what thing?
Of the question here.
No, that's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. So while you're doing that, go ahead and
got
and
it.
Thank you for being here with me, man.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, it was fun. I have a good time doing this. Today was definitely fun. And, you know, if somebody comes across something that I said and it turns out I was wrong, you know what? Go ahead and tell us. It's okay. You know? like I said, you know, science tries to find out when things are wrong, and it tries to admit its mistakes. I try to do the same. So, like I said, you know, if you see something, if I said something, I'm wrong, and you have the proof that I'm wrong, then point it out to me. I'll take care of it.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that skeptics, as much as we hate it on an emotional level, we love it on an intellectual level, to find out that we made a mistake and we can learn from it so that we don't make that mistake again. There is an argument that says, if I've made a mistake, show me, and I will not make that argument again. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that stands dogma apart from skepticism. Dogma says, use this. This is the truth always in all situations. That is it. Case closed, no matter what. La, 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 la. Where skepticism says, dude, listen to me and open your eyes.
Listen to the words that my beard has to say.
Let's not. But ultimately, the point of all of these endeavors is to lift the veil off of everything that we didn't understand before, little by little. We as a society, as a species, as a culture, value learning new things. Why can I say that as a blanket statement? Look at any society, no matter how bereft of money or resources, you will do your damnedest, you will try your hardest to get your children, even to the most barest of levels, to communicate, to understand around them, to identify people, places, things, colors, sounds, maybe even numbers and letters and words and phrases and concepts. It is innate in our nature to try to learn, even to a barest of levels. The difference is continuing on that exploration for the rest of our lives. The scientific process is not the complete eradication of ignorance. It's to never stop learning. We will always, absolutely always, be ignorant about something. The biggest trick is to not be afraid to push past it. And that is what sets us apart. Not as skeptics, but as people. We can teach and we can learn. Which one is more important is entirely up to you. For me, I couldn't even answer that because it changes from moment to moment. And as much as I like to be the teacher for my daughter, I still learn from her. Thank you all for joining us. And of course, thank you for viewing if you're watching this on YouTube after the fact. I've said on many occasions, I know full well this is not a sexy podcast. We hold ourselves to roughly a PG, PG-13 type of show, and that's for an intent. However, if you're looking for something a little bit more abusive, tune in for one of our Power of 10 shows. Every 10th episode, we pull down the walls and we don't care what we say, and we intentionally make it not safe for work. However, we're also going to be investigating having people show up on the show also, the general populace. So if you'd like to send information our way, if you've got questions, if you've got comments, topics, ideas for the show, or even to be put onto a list for a future panelist, please send them over to me as shujintribble@gmail.com. Be more than happy to investigate that. And of course, if you'd like to, if you're here in the States or in Canada, North America, basically, if you'd like to send in a voicemail, you can also do that from outside of North America. I don't know how much it would cost you, but the phone number you see here on the screen, 959-HCTV-554. There's actually a reason for those numbers to a certain degree. Be more than happy to cover stuff. If you'd like to follow me on any of the major instant messaging systems or social medias, you can find me under the name Shujin Tribble. Just Google me. It's really hard to miss me. Of course, very large thanks to Cash from Atheist on Air for being with us before. Noah and Heath from The Scathing Atheist. There are a number of other groups that I would otherwise thank, but I want to specifically thank who was it? Patriot in Atlanta on Twitter. Twitter handle Patriot in Atlanta at Watcher on a Wall, who on Friday listed my Twitter account as part of a Follow Friday in conjunction with, believe it or not, No Illusions and the Dissonance podcast, as well as Atheists on Air. I don't feel qualified to be part of that group, but I accept it gratefully because, as a topic that we're going to handle in the near future, every voice deserves the opportunity to be heard. An opportunity is not saying you must listen. An opportunity is giving you the chance. And if you're worthwhile, people will follow. Thank you for joining us. In the meantime, of course, as always, please consider subscribing and joining us over here on G+ and YouTube. We'll look forward to seeing you guys again in another week. That puts our next show as October 4th. I don't as yet have a topic. I'm going to see about a couple of different guests to come in, including Lucinda Illusions. I'm going to see if she'd be willing to come and join us again, as well as Sam Mulvey and Seth Andrews to talk about how many voices should there be out there in the atheist and skeptical circles. But we'll talk about that later. Put a bug in their ears if you're watching and let them know that I'm going to ask them to join us sometime. For all of you, of course, like I said, thank you for joining us. We look forward to speaking with you again sometime in the future. For all of you, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. And of course, as always, after my goodnights for you, I say my goodnights for my lady too. Because 9.5 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. Until the very next time we get together, everyone, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.